You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, the only home for daily podcast commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. On today's show, Wednesday afternoon, we're less than 24 hours removed from an amazing win in Game 4 at Oracle Arena on late Tuesday night, tying the Western Conference Finals at two games apiece, and barely over 24 hours away from a crucial Game 5 at Toyota Center on Thursday evening for what should be an absolutely raucous and wild environment. So to both look back on yesterday's game and preview looking ahead to what is now a monumental Game 5, I'm joined by a guy who knows the Rockets quite well and is very involved in their home game activities. That's Adam Clanton, Rockets Radio Network host. Adam, how's it going, my friend?
Very good, Ben. How are you?
Doing well. Excited to see you tomorrow night. I imagine everybody tomorrow night, that environment is just going to be ridiculous. I know you've covered a lot of Rockets games, especially the last two seasons, in your official role with the broadcast crew, but I would imagine that tomorrow night, it should be a pretty special atmosphere. And in fairness to the fans, for all that's been lobbed at them this offseason, I thought the crowds in both Game 1 and Game 2 of this series were really strong, and that was before the Rockets had even won a game going into either one of those. So now that you enter a Game 5 that's tied at 2 in a series that the Rockets have won twice already, I'm expecting a pretty juiced environment tomorrow night. Is that fair?
Yeah, and you've got the 8 o'clock start, so that helps. I know that there's been much speculation about why the Houston Rockets crowds are late arriving. Although, if you looked around, I mean, the Astros won the World Series last year, and there were a lot of empty seats throughout the season. And the Texans are infamous for having a horn on top of NRG Stadium to let fans know, hey, it's time to come in and watch the football game. But so, I say it's a Houston thing. It's a very diverse city. It's a transplant city. So there, I think, are times where, fair or not, like it or not, you've got to be pretty competitive to get this city's attention at times, just because although there are the diehards out there, there's a lot of things to do in this town. But I think the Rockets are pretty entrenched now in a situation where their fans can say, all right, that's a pretty good reason to go down there to Toyota Center and be, get my butt in my seat on time for an 8 o'clock tip. And I think you're right. You're going to have some fans that are not only, wild about what's going on right now, but this is a rivalry that, Warriors fans aren't going to recognize because they're smug and arrogant and everything else that is wrong in the world. but in all seriousness, it's just the Rockets, it always seems like the Warriors have been standing in the way of any sort of real success, basically since James Harden put on Rockets red. So I think fans have every reason in the world, especially coming off that gutsy win last night, and just knowing that you're two wins away from the NBA Finals, they're going to show up and they're going to show out.
Contextualize that game last night for me, because, Adam, one of the things I really like about you, of course, you've got a balanced take on all Houston sports. And as far as the last 20 years, other than Game 7 of the 2017 World Series, for the obvious reason, and I would say probably Game 5 because it puts you one win away and was one of the greatest games in sports history. Other than those two, that gutsy win you mentioned last night, given the circumstances that it's probably the most talented team ever assembled in the NBA on the road, it's tough for me to think of anything bigger in the past 20 years other than those last couple of games for the Astros in the World Series. Where did that one, just from like the Houston sports fan pantheon, where did that one last night rank for you?
It's up there because of what you said. Now, I think it was Dale Robertson was mentioning that it was the biggest win in Rockets history outside of the 86 clincher over the Lakers when Ralph Sampson hit the turnaround at the Forum. I don't know if I'd go that far because I want to see how this series pans out. I like the Rockets' chances a lot, probably a lot more than a lot of people out there. But I think that, depending upon what happens in the rest of this series, it could rank up there, and especially, yeah, the context of those of that time frame that you mentioned. When you take the Astros World Series out of it, this city's had a big time drought. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where you talked about the Rockets in the playoffs, and it was about, all right, they've gotten out of the first round how many times? And that finally happened, you know, when they got, I think it was Portland back in 2009. They finally got out of the first round and kind of broke that curse.
Yep.
And then, you know, pretty soon the Warriors got put together. So it's been a drought of epic proportions. I don't think any of us thought that we'd be waiting 23 plus years from the last time the Rockets won a championship, especially with the star power that they managed to bring in the late 90s. It just didn't work for whatever reason. And then we know about Yao and Tracy's injuries, and then Dwight and James not really being able to coexist ultimately. So here we are. And yeah, if that last night is the turning point in this series somehow, if that dunk on Draymond Green is the turning point in this series, I don't know what it is, but if that's indeed what propels the Rockets into the NBA Finals, where I think they're going to win against whoever they play, yeah, that's pretty big right there.
Adam, I want to ask you about James Harden. I know Chris is getting a lot of the headlines, and deservedly so, based on how well he played in the fourth quarter, but to some extent we're overlooking that on a basketball court with Harden, Paul, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, it was James Harden's 30 points who had more than anyone. And, of course, I know a lot of them came in the first half, although that dunk over Draymond Green was just emblematic of the fact that the Rockets were not going to go away, that they were here to stay. You're a guy, you know what you've said a few years back about James Harden, your skepticism of him, and to your credit, you've owned it, what especially the past couple of years he's done in terms of leadership, and I would say especially that kind of situation, not wilting, being able to kind of power through, lead the way, whatever intangibles you want to throw out there. I'm just curious, your thoughts on that game last night from James, because to me, that game gets away from the Rockets in the first half, if not for what James Harden did. And then secondly, from a bigger picture standpoint, when did you sense, when was the point, it could be this season, last season, that James Harden mentally had turned a corner? Because 2 or 3 years ago in the playoffs, especially if you're down 2-1 to the Warriors and they go out to a 12-0 start, I'm not sure if he responds the way he did last night. But whenever the corner was turned, it certainly seems like it's been turned, and he's not going away like maybe a few years ago he might would have.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue I dealt with in the past, you know, calendar year has been, you know, people that would come at me, knowing that I worked for the team, criticizing him for the end of the San Antonio series last year. And, you know, fair or not, I think there was some fairness to some of the criticism. But, you know, and I think we've talked about this particular game before, game 6 against the Spurs, where he wasn't exactly getting a heck of a lot of help from anybody else on that roster that night. And maybe he did hit a wall. To me, it's irrelevant in some ways, although if you want to answer this question, I guess it's fair to take the entirety of his, you know, his resume into account. You've got a guy who last night, let's just take last night's game, for example, that game embodied all of the good and the bad that we have heard about James Harden, that we have seen James Harden with our own eyes. You're talking about what he did in the second quarter. You're talking about what he did late. And then for all of those plays, there's the play where he's wide open for that 3-point shot and just passes it off. And it's just kind of mind-numbing. I remember LeBron James getting this kind of criticism. I'm old enough now, unfortunately, to be able to look back and remember when the big hot topic the day after with all these knucklehead, you know, talking heads in the mornings was, why did LeBron pass? Why did he pass off on that play? Why didn't he take that shot? Where we all knew that if the guy takes the shot and misses it, well, then he's not clutch. There is a door that's going to open to another door that's going to open to another door of criticism around every corner for guys like this. To me, the way I look at it, if I'm a Rockets fan, I don't like hearing all that chatter, that's good, because that means the guy that you're talking about like that, in this case James Harden, is so good that he can be scrutinized like this. He can be on that level where we have to decide whether or not we put him in that upper echelon of the elite, elite players. This is not Russell Westbrook getting cute triple-doubles. This is not, you know, some under echelon star, you know, mid-tier status. This is a guy who is at the top of the top of the top. This is a guy who's in the same conversation as LeBron, as Kevin Durant, as some of these superstars that are just, you know, one of a kind. So in that case, I get it. I get where the criticism comes from. And I get where it's easy for people to pick at certain aspects of his game. What I don't like is when he's not fairly given credit. And I still think that James Harden is not given the credit he's probably due. And I think another part of proving that is looking at this series. Look at Steph Curry right now. The narrative for this guy changes with each passing quarter. If he doesn't play well, he's hurt. If he does play well, he's back. And this literally changes from game to game and minute to minute. You don't get that kind of benefit of the doubt if you're James Harden. Matter of fact, James Harden's defense is still being criticized, and the guy had like 7 deflections in last night's game. Have you ever heard Steph Curry not get a pass from the media about that aspect of his game? So I just to take those two into account, for example, and it was why I was so hotly contested about the MVP race that came down to those two a few years back. And ultimately, Steph Curry got it because his team had the better record. I'll let you guys talk about the irony of that with the Russell Westbrook Award a couple of years later. But when it comes to James Harden, I think he's an enigma. I think he is not necessarily well-liked like some of the other superstars around the league for whatever reason. Maybe it's because he's a little bit aloof. Maybe it's because he's a bit of a loner at times. Maybe it's a guy that, you know, you see him out in the club after the game and that rubs you the wrong way because, you know, you're perfect on your high horse. I don't know. All I know is I liken him a lot to Kobe Bryant in that way. A guy who just wasn't always going to be understood by everybody and didn't really care a whole heck of a lot about that. James Harden is a guy who walks to the beat of his own drummer. He's always been that way. It's what got him to where he is now, and it's, you know, done pretty well for him. And I don't see him changing anytime soon. What I have seen, as we wind up this very long-winded answer, is what you were talking about. What has changed? What has made him become? Well, he stopped dating Kardashians. He started focusing on basketball. He and Chris Paul made it a point to say, we want to play together, A, and B, we want it to work. You can put superstars together like he and Dwight Howard, but if it doesn't work, or if you guys aren't committed, both of you, all in to basketball, it's not going to work. And we saw that with Dwight. He didn't want to do what Clint Capella is excelling at, and he's out the door, and the Rockets are in the Western Conference Finals without him again. So I just feel like James has, you know, he's 28. I think he's in his 9th year. This is a guy that you compare to like Hakeem, to Jordan. These guys didn't win until they were in their 9th, 10th seasons in the NBA, somewhere around that time. So it takes a while sometimes for people to mature in all walks of life. And maybe that's what happened with James Harden. All I know is that he's got the Rockets 2 wins away from an NBA Finals, and I think that deserves a lot of credit.
And by the way, your point on Steph Curry and the always changing narratives regarding how healthy he is, it's an amazing contrast to Chris Paul, who quite frankly, we know after the giant wrap he had on his foot, ankle, Achilles, whatever it may be, in the 4th quarter of game 2, is not nearly 100%, but you don't hear nearly as much talk about that with Chris Paul. When Chris got off to a slow start last night, we know the takes that were out there. It was just folks that were rushing to kind of build up this playoff CP3 thing, which is laughable because Chris Paul's playoff numbers have always been excellent. The problem with Chris Paul in the playoffs has been that before this year, the second best player he's played with on those teams has either been Blake Griffin or David West, which is just nowhere near good enough. But yet, even though he's pretty clearly limited, at the same time, you don't hear anywhere near the talk when it comes to Chris Paul and playing through pain, which fortunately he did successfully last night, 27 points, 5 of 9 from behind the arc, as you do Steph Curry. So I completely buy that, not just for Curry to Harden, but Curry compared to Paul as well. Adam, what I want to get your take on, next question, is Mike D'Antoni, because I know you mentioned that Spurs series earlier. A year ago, he took a lot of criticism for the 7-man rotation. And there's been some talk about that in the past day, not nearly as much negatively because, well, first off, you won the game. But aside from the issues of wins versus losses, to me, the 7-man rotation this year is different for A couple of key reasons. First off, with the Luke Bamute injury, they don't really have a choice. You're in a do-or-die mindset right now, and if Luke doesn't really trust that shoulder, physically, mentally, whatever it may be, then it's tough to play him. And secondly, part of the issue I think last year was that they went to that seven-man rotation in the semis, whereas even if you get through that series, you still have to deal with how do you get through the Warriors the next round. Whereas now, this is it. This is the series. So personally, I'm a little more understanding of going seven men than I was a year ago. I think if you could question one thing, you could point to Clint Capella playing just 24 minutes last night, 22 in game three, and Capella did have 13 boards, two blocks in his 24 minutes, which is a good stat line. But I think the reason the Rockets went in that direction is because if the Warriors don't have Andre Iguodala and they're going to be more traditional with guys like Looney and Jordan Bell out there in the middle, then you probably need to zig where they zag. And if they're going to go big, then maybe that makes it easier to run your tuck wagon lineups and get kind of a contrast there as opposed to running the tuck wagon when they're running the Hamptons five and you're kind of feeding into the way they want to play. That's just me thinking out loud. But other than the minutes for Capella, it's hard for me to find much criticism in Mike D'Antoni going to that seven-man rotation with the starters plus Eric Gordon plus Gerald Green, because I'm not really sure who else could play. It's not like you can trust Luke. And in this series, it doesn't seem that Nene or Ryan Anderson would be playable based on the athletes and the spacing that Golden State throws at you. So just curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that last part kind of is where I wanted to go with this, because the old saying is it's all about matchups. And if you don't have the personnel to match up, or if you don't think some of your personnel does match up versus some teams, versus others, like you talk about Clint Capella, for example. The guy dominated Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert in consecutive series. That's nothing to sneeze at. It just hasn't been his series, and we kind of, for all the talk about, okay, Clint Capella is going to be the X factor. He can be if you can get him in that pick and roll game, but the credit to the Warriors for effectively eliminating a lot of those cheap baskets that he got. Last night he was quiet again, but there have been moments in the series where he's had his moments, but it is all about matchups. And if you're Mike D'Antoni and your squad better than anybody out there, even guys like us that are talking about them that watch every game, something tells me Mike D'Antoni knows a little bit more about his team than any of the rest of us. You're the best guy to be able to determine how many minutes certain players are going to be able to play and how short that rotation is going to be. Now, does he have a reputation as having a short leash when it comes to the playoffs over the years, regardless of the team? Of course. He's got a lot of things that people are pointing to as his reputation. And, this, ironically, is a playoff run that is as much about possible redemption for Mike D'Antoni as it is for any of the players named James Harden, Chris Paul, or anybody else. Look at the scoreboard. It's two games apiece right now. So he's doing something right. He's going up against the most ridiculously talented put together video game roster in the history of the NBA, and he's got a best of three with two of those games possibly coming at home. I think he's doing all right. So let's just wait and see. Let's save the Monday morning quarterbacking at least until after this series. And just see if maybe Mike D'Antoni knows something more than we do.
How do you respond to the folks that are out there? I know you're on your Twitter hiatus, but I know you're still able to see a lot of the takes that are out there in the national media. When it's already started that the Rockets only won by three, and granted it was at Oracle Arena, that's the first thing you can point out, but the Rockets only won by three, and Durant was 9 of 24, Steph Curry was 10 of 26, and like 1 of 10 in the fourth quarter. Klay Thompson was 4 of 13. Iguodala didn't play. And basically what they're trying to say is that even in that perfect storm of circumstances, the Rockets narrowly won. And my response to that, and I'm curious what yours would be, but my response would be that it's not that the Rockets played a perfect game either. When they won that game 2 going away, they did it in large part because Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Trevor Ariza, the supporting cast and role players typically play better at home, and now the Rockets have two of the final three games in a best-of-three series in Houston. Gordon was 6 of 9 from behind the arc. Trevor was 7 of 9. PJ was 8 of 9. Last night, Eric was 1 of 8 from 3. Now, to his credit, the one he made was enormous to give him a 5-point lead and two and a half minutes left, but it was not a good game for him. PJ was 0-4, although he did have 16 massive rebounds and a game-high 44 minutes, the ultimate in Iron Man, which we're becoming accustomed to that with PJ. But I guess my point to those who act like that the Warriors had so many things go wrong and the Rockets only won by three, it's not like the Rockets played their A game ever. It was just a gritty game. The Rockets found a way to survive. And can the Warriors play better in Thursday's game five? Yes. But in my opinion, the Rockets can play a whole heck of a lot better as well. Is that kind of how you see it?
Well, yeah. First of all, you talk about the wins and the losses. The 41-point loss counts just the same as a three-point win. You don't get two wins in a series for the Warriors because they won by 41, and the Rockets don't get only a half win because they won by three last night. I mean, come on. It all counts the same. And the Rockets, if you want to look at a silver lining, did not play particularly well in either of those two games in long stretches. I mean, they had their moments last night and had enough to pull out the win. And yeah, the Warriors did not play well last night, but how about giving the Rockets defense credit for that job on Kevin Durant? How about giving the Rockets defense credit on Steph Curry completely vanishing in the fourth quarter, which, by the way, if James Harden had done, we know what the narrative would have been today. But again, Steph Curry gets a pass from the media for whatever reason. That guy was shimmying up the court when he had 17 points in the third, and it was an 8-point lead, and I didn't hear much from him after that. So, you know, I don't know what it's going to take. And I really, at this point, and I've learned this the hard way through much heartburn medication and, you know, consternation, who cares? Who cares yep. what Stephen A. Smith, who doesn't watch a lick of Rockets basketball consistently, says? Who cares what Colin Cowherd says? Who cares what, you know, any of these fill-in-the-blank national types who already have their ridiculous bias set in? And yes, I am saying that because it's obvious. I wouldn't say it if it weren't. Who cares what they think? If the Rockets play to their strengths and the Rockets do what they do best, they can beat anybody in the league, including the Golden State Warriors. And you saw that in Game 2. If they play another two games like Game 2, they're going to the NBA Finals. I don't care what the Warriors do. I don't care what they've done. I don't care what they can do in the future. This Rockets team was built to beat this Warriors squad, and they have done it now four times this year. In the regular season on opening night, which was a very similar game to this one last night, if you want to, you know, compare things, they beat them here in Houston in a gutted-out game, and the game they lost in the regular season, Kevin Durant and James Harden didn't play, so I kind of throw that one out. But then you go to the playoffs now, and they've won twice, once on their home floor, something no team has done in the last 16 tries. So, again, the Rockets are probably not getting the credit they deserve. The Rockets certainly didn't get any sort of chance from anybody outside of this market at the outset of the series, especially after Game 1. It was like they shouldn't even show up to play the series after that. They should just go ahead and forfeit and, yep. and give the Warriors the championship. They're not in this thing to just be seen and make a nice showing. They're in this thing to win it, and it says here they probably will do so in seven games if they do what I think they're going to do over the next three outings.
That leads directly into my last segment, which is going to be predictions, because I said Rockets in seven before the series. I'm sticking with it. I know that Vegas has the Warriors still as slight favorites. To me, I think it's better than 50-50. It's far from a done deal, but I think it's better than 50-50. I'd say maybe 55-45. You could maybe even talk me to 60-40 if you really want to twist my arm, that the Rockets get this done, because I'm a big believer that these two teams, we have a ton of data. 82 regular season games, 14 playoff games, including four against each other, in which it's tied 2-2. We have 96 games worth of data, Adam, that says despite the narratives, despite what all the talking heads say, these two teams are really, really close. And the deeper you go into a series like this, the tougher it is to win away from home. So, yes, it can all be taken away if the Rockets lose tomorrow night. I'm aware of that. But as we chat this Wednesday afternoon, I really think the odds are better than 50-50, assuming, that, of course, the Houston crowd brings it, like I think we know they can and will, that the Rockets, despite the Vegas odds, I think if you just look at the data, strip the narratives, the legacies out of play, the defending champions, the names Curry, Durant, all those things off the back of the jerseys, and just profile the two teams like, you know, one's wearing I guess, a blue jersey and the other a red or whatever the various color combinations are, to me, I think it's better than 50-50 that the team with two of the final three home games in what is now a best of three series is the favorite. And it sounds like you believe along similar lines.
Yeah, I said Rockets in seven before the series as well. The games didn't go exactly like I thought they would the first four, but the final three, how I had it, was the home team winning every game. And so it doesn't really matter at this point how you got to this point. You're still on track for that prediction to be solidified. And this what they did last night was the impossible. That was the impossible hump to get over. That's what everybody said they couldn't do because nobody had done it in 3 years. And they added Kevin Durant during that span. But the Rockets did it. They went to Oracle and they won a game on that floor. And if you ask me, Warriors fans were a whole lot more salty about that after last night than any Rockets fan I was talking to following the Game 3 loss by 41. It's funny how that happens. And it to me, when you kind of asked me earlier when I thought this could be a thing, I guess. And to me, I kind of took note well before any of this happened. And really, I think it was after the Rockets and Warriors had got done playing their regular season matchups. Because remember, the last time they played was late January.
Yep.
So I specifically remember being in Minneapolis at the Super Bowl when the news of Steve Kerr's Twitter flub happened, where he meant to direct message somebody, but he got hacked and all that.
Yeah.
Talking about James Harden getting calls. To me, that was the latest example of something that had already been kind of going on. The Rockets, believe it or not, have been in the Warriors' heads.
Yep.
There are commentators from the Bay Area. There's Steve Kerr. There's Draymond Green. There's a whole host of examples you can point to. Look them up. I promise you, they're there. Of times where the Warriors have spoken about the Rockets. Now, you can say, like, let's take this into context. The reporter asked the question, he brought it up. Okay, fine. But the point being is, if you're going to ask me who's been talking about whom more, it's not what the national media would have you believe, that the Rockets, because of what Daryl Morey said, are obsessed with beating the Warriors. They are, by the way, and they should be because they're the defending champs. But the Warriors have been the ones making the petty comments from almost day one this season, knowing that the Rockets went out and got Chris Paul with the express desire to beat you, knowing that this is the de facto NBA Finals, for all likelihood. So I just feel like, with all that taken into account, the Rockets obviously have done something to get the Warriors' attention. The Rockets did something that no one else has done in a very long time last night. And the Rockets have home court advantage. So, like you said, play the percentages and all that kind of stuff. I've never been a betting man, so Vegas does nothing for me. And if you ever watched the Rockets' 95 title run, it wouldn't do anything for you there either. But this team's much better. I mean, this is a monster, monster roster that the organization has put together. When you're talking about an organization that the most wins was 58, and they obliterated that record this year, there's a reason why they did that. It's not because of simply watered-down competition around the rest of the league. There are two teams that I think were real contenders for the title this year. They're the Warriors and the Rockets. They're playing right now. They're tied at two games apiece, and two of the next three will be played inside Toyota Center if it comes to that. So if the Rockets take care of business at home, they are fine.
Adam, I think that'll do it for the basketball portion of the podcast. Got one final question for you. We know free agency is starting in the NBA a little over a month, essentially 11 p.m. Houston time on June 30th. You've got your own personal free agency going on right now, of course. Fans can still hear you on the Rockets Radio Network broadcast, but as far as your usual roles and on Twitter, at Adam Clinton, I know you've got a lot of fans that would love to hear from you. So if you can, just update us the final couple of minutes. I know that you see some of the comments that you've gotten from people, because certainly a lot of fans, especially in the Rockets community, really, really do miss you. So if there's something you can say to those folks, just use this as your forum to kind of reach out to your audience that maybe hasn't heard from you as much over the past couple of weeks, with the exception, of course, being the Rockets radio broadcast.
Yeah, well, I mean, I first of all, the amount of positive feedback I got, and I can just, any sort of category you can think of, whether it was text, phone calls, tweets, Facebook, Instagram, carrier mail, whatever it was, got a lot of that that I honestly was not expecting. I knew that there were some people who had my back around the city, but I had no idea the outpouring I would get. I don't know if it's because of the situation or just because they like me, but I really, really appreciate it and continue to appreciate it. I got a message today from someone. It's been mind-blowing to me how many people have reached out to give positive feedback. And, you know, Paul Heyman once said, where there's chaos, there's opportunity. I just look at this as a situation that was probably best for me. I can only speak for me.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely looking at the situation that way. Hadn't been happy in a while, so I'll just leave it at that. And as far as the next move, I'm plotting it very carefully, but am fortunate enough not to have to jump right back into the fray, whatever it may be. And I've always said, you know, sports talk radio, I guess, as a genre, because it's what I've done the last, you know, for the better part of since I got out of college, I guess, what, 12, 13 years ago now. Geez, I'm old. Is that this job, this profession does not define me, and it never has and it never will. And I'm fine with that. I'm very comfortable with that. And if I never got on the air in any way, shape, or form ever again, I'd be okay with that. But having said that, I enjoy what I do with the Rockets immensely. I would love for that to continue, and I think there's some things in place that would allow that to continue, obviously. But they're in the middle of a title run right now, so we're not going to find out anything on that on that regard for a while. And I'm fine with that, too. So I'm just enjoying this ride. I'm definitely enjoying the downtime. And as far as the Twitter thing goes, that's just a decompression thing that is self-imposed. Nobody's telling me not to tweet. Nobody with the Rockets organization. Nobody at my former employer. No one is telling me I can't say anything. I'm as free of a free agent as possible, and will remain so until something else happens. But I'm just kind of taking some time off because it's a crazy world out there on those Twitter streets. And frankly, I just don't have to right now. And I like that. So I got a baby on the way in October. And
congrats.
Yep. So I appreciate it. Bigger fish to fry. You know, I got his latest photos today. He had a photo session, the 20-week sonogram. So I've got a lot of good things on my end. I got a great wife, got a great family. And a lot of things going for me right now that are very easily distracting from any sort of unemployment line or whatever you want to call it. There's worse things in this world than being fired from a place, and I aim to prove that over the next few months.
Good to hear. And yeah, I'm right there with you. We all need a decompression from Twitter at one time or another. It can get absolutely ridiculous. And I think especially with kind of the emotionally charged sentiments of everything that happened on your last day, it's probably good to just take a deep breath and get out of the fray. And truth be told, you know, we're all addicted to it, but quite frankly, during some of these Rockets games where they lose, it's probably healthier if you're not on Twitter to begin with. So
yeah, no, I mean, believe me, don't think that I haven't thought a few times during the latter stages of the Utah series, and especially this series, you know what, I don't really miss all that right now. I see it. I'm not unaware. Again, that's why I thanked everybody that gave me so much support. I see everything. I'm seeing everything. And I'll be back when the time is right. Don't worry.
Awesome. Appreciate that. Well, Adam, thanks so much for the time. Folks, that's Adam Clanton, Rockets Radio Network host. Follow him on Twitter because, as he says, at some point he will be back at Adam Clanton. Adam, thanks so much for the time, buddy.
You're the man, Ben. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. That's Adam Clanton, Rockets Radio Network host. Great guy. Happy for him that he's got so many things going on positively, of course, in his personal life, but also with the Rockets getting to host games across the network on a team that is now just two games away from the NBA Finals. For now, I think that'll do it as far as our preview for today, because we had last night's postgame show. If you have not checked out that, you can access our Locked On Archives, our Locked On Rockets Archives, excuse me, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, wherever you listen to your podcast. Search for Locked On Rockets, and if you subscribe to us, that's how you get any of our episodes the moment they come out. And even if you're not able to listen then, I'm sure it's easy to get reminders. Also, while you're doing that, leave us a 5-star review. That's how we're able to look attractive to advertisers and make the business model work financially as the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. So again, special thanks to Adam for joining us. Thanks to you guys, as always, for listening. And that'll do it for today because, well, we're just over 24 hours removed from the pivotal Game 5, after which we will have full post-game analysis, per usual, right here at Locked On Rockets. If you want more content in the interim between now and tomorrow night's post-game show, best place to get it from me is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Other ways to contact, we've got an email address, lockdownrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account at facebook.com/lockdownrockets, and a website at lockdownrockets.com. And, of course, we've also got all the places that you can subscribe to us, as mentioned earlier. One final time, he's Adam Clanton, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets, the home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball. For tonight, we'll sign off, and we'll be talking again very soon, late Thursday evening, after the pivotal Game 5 between the Warriors and Rockets in the Western Conference Finals goes final.